Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Friday, July 30th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or in the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a tool that I've used to great effect. That chapter is a narrative description of this Why Is This Happening to Me Again tool, the Reality Management Worksheet. And that tool is a tool I've used to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've each been gifted. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple click and download a PDF file, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process, and those audio files can serve as a powerful teaching tool tutorial for you. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of the worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, because that frequently leads them to have comments or questions or testimonials, and that's what we're here for. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a question mark by your phone number, and I will announce you by your area code, and we'll have a conversation. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook exercises this year. Today is the 211th day of the year. The workbook lesson is, again, a review. And the reminder is that I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as the Creator created me. Today's lesson is the review of lesson 191, which states, I am the Holy Son of God Himself. I am the offspring of creation. It reads, in silence and in true humility, I seek the Creator's glory to behold it in the offspring whom was created as myself. I am not a body. I am free. I am still as the Creator created me. Pam Grout's Course in Miracles Experiment Book, Lesson 211, reads, titled, The World's Most Enjoyable, quote, Diet, close quotes. She quotes Course in Miracles where it says, let us be glad that we will see what we believe and that we can change what we believe. Pam writes, Travel writers are frequently invited on cruises. And, true to reputation, these seagoing mini villages offer an unlimited lineup of amazing eating opportunities, which gives me the opportunity to put my Course in Miracles principles to the test. The dominant paradigm, that we are nothing but bodies, suggests that A, cruises and weight gain are synonymous, and B, I will inevitably return home from a cruise with extra poundage. Very few people would argue this, except obstinate old me. I choose to use cruises as a laboratory. Instead of succumbing to the extremely popular pairing of cruises and weight gain, I choose to be a guinea pig for the greater good of humanity. I employ my superpower to lose weight. My superpower, which also happens to be your superpower, is love. Every moment we get the opportunity to love what's in front of us. Every person, every event, every seeming mishap. My cruise hypothesis is that if I love everything about each cruise, love myself more and more every moment, in parens she writes, not always the easiest task, close parens, and if I love every morsel of food I put in my mouth, I can maintain my weight. Or heck, why not declare that I will drop a pound or two? The challenge, of course, is letting go of guilt, letting go of everything my culture tells me. What does it tell me? It tells me that I should diet and that women my age have no choice but to gain weight and that going on a cruise is a recipe for looking as big as the whales on my swimsuit. Pam writes, I'm happy to report that even though I enjoy some of the best food on the planet, my body continues to run the programming I installed from an early age. Quote, I can eat whatever I want and maintain a healthy, lithe, and beautiful body, close quotes. Yes, I often weigh less when I disembark from a cruise. So that's Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment lesson for today. And we have 50 minutes left for comments, questions, answers, soliloquies. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? What would you like us to talk about today? What's been bubbling up in your world that could use some input from a slightly different perspective? I was privileged a couple weeks ago to interview Lauren Spiro. And Lauren is one of the creators of Emotional CPR, emotional-cpr.org. And the Emotional CPR stands for Connect, Empower, and Revitalize. And it's a, I think she said it's a 14-hour training program that they're using around the globe. They're introducing it to teachers and students and veterinarians and people in developing countries as a way to train peer-to-peer counselors to help people begin to learn some of the fundamental deep listening skills and the therapeutic effects of deeply connecting with another human being and validating their experience and teaching them some basic skills for processing through and releasing the negative emotions that arise, and so emotional CPR is something you might want to look into if you're getting less than full benefits from the reality management worksheet or the the MindShifter targeted journaling tool, the tool I was referring to yesterday, the three early memories of conflict, the mind goal management sheet, the codependent to interdependence worksheet that has me recognize that any time I give somebody advice, that's the perfect way to improve my life and my relationships. And as we've highlighted in the recent past, a whole host of other tools that are made available on the website at whyagain.org. And we just continue to look for other people doing similar work who have a slightly different take on how to help people identify what they're doing with their minds, identify how the energies that each of us have downloaded over the years when we've had a traumatic interaction or an interaction that we interpreted as being traumatic. And whenever those energies get resonated again later on in our lives, they literally disrupt our functioning. They literally make it difficult for us to function with full access to our more mature coping mechanisms. And the more we work with these tools, the more we learn how our minds are connected in this energy system to what we call our physical bodies, the more freedom and liberty we have to move through these life events that might trigger a negative response and be informed by the life event and be informed by the negativity about what's going on inside us rather than continually staying focused on the outside world or what someone else is doing or not doing that we think they should. I had somebody in my office earlier today, and we were working very heavily on the idea that these emotional energies, these stuck points in a relationship and various negative life situations that get lodged in my body's energy system will eventually begin to manifest as a negative physical symptom. And that is, it can be tightness in a jaw, it can be pain in a shoulder, it can be a back that, quote, goes out, close quotes, it can be a rash, it can be a migraine headache, it can be stomach cramps, it can be anxiety attacks or a panic attack. And my willingness to use the tools to explore what's going on in my mental and emotional life whenever there's a physical ache or a pain just opens up, you know, untold myriad possibilities for me to get movement and have solutions rather than stay stuck in the same old pattern of I get a physical ache or a pain, I take a pill, or I go to a doctor, or I go to a chiropractor, or I numb myself out with some other drug of choice, and or race to the emergency room and have all kinds of tests run. And while it's okay, especially if you're feeling an emergent crisis, it's perfectly okay to go to the medical doctor and have all kinds of tests run. And then, if and when they discover that those tests all look fine and there's nothing that their tests can discern that would reveal a physical cause, then please avail yourself of these other tools. Explore how your mental and emotional life is directly connected to your physical aches and pains. I had another person in my office yesterday for a first session, and he's past his mid-60s, and he has had 3 different surgeries on his back, and he's had a nerve block stimulator implanted in his body, and he has to take oxycodone every day, because by the time he reaches, I believe he said it was 1 o'clock, his pain is so bad that he takes his oxycodone, and then he basically can't do anything. He can't function the rest of the day. And he takes one at 1 or 2 o'clock, and then he takes another one at 5 or 6, and another one at midnight. And that's how he gets through the day. So he's had at least 2, maybe 3 back surgeries. He has a nerve block stimulator implant in his body that's constantly sending signals to block the nerve, which is supposed to block the pain. And the pain is still there. And I've had the blessing of being able to work with a number of people over the years who, when they've had that many physical, allopathic medical, surgical, and nerve block stimulator interventions, and they still have pain, they are finally willing to explore the mental and emotional seeds or exacerbations to that pain. And my hope is that this will be yet another person who's willing to look at what's happening in his mind, mentally and emotionally, that may be locking tension, locking trauma into his body that literally no amount of surgery and drugging and nerve blocking stimulation can override. And if he can find that out and use some tools to become aware of, clarify, and dismantle some of those mental, emotional energies, hopes, fears, traumas, etc., he may find substantial relief from the pain that isn't getting relieved any other way. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? What topic would you like us to explore? What person do you think I should call for an interview or book I should read to expand my horizons related to this kind of work? Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Long time no talk. I wondered if you could go back and read the Miracles lesson again. It's so short. There's one sentence in there that I want to use as a springboard, but I don't have it in front of me.
So lesson 211 simply says, I am the holy offspring of creation itself. In silence and in humility, I seek God's glory, to behold it in the Son, whom he created as myself. Now, were you thinking about that, or were you thinking about Pam Grout's book?
I think I neither one. Basically, I've been doing the same worksheet every day since my son really went into a crisis mode. I do one on him most, but also I do one on the worldview that I still think I hold that's pretty much based on what the Buddha said, life is suffering. Okay, now we could go into that and discuss what he meant by that and so on. But I have this stance, and I've, maybe it's true and maybe not true, that I made the decision to see life that way when I was 8 years old. And it was a rather dramatic splitting of me looking at an image of myself in the mirror, seeing this little 8-year-old crying, appreciating the drama of the fact that I had just gotten it, that life is suffering, life is hard. But I was also very excited about realizing that I had matured enough to realize the truth, and that there was something exhilarating about feeling that at last I'm conscious. I remember thinking, now I am conscious. That sounds so weird, but I've been practicing going back to that scene and seeing a child in the mirror who is deciding that life is wonderful and exciting and joyful. And both, there's excitement on both sides, deciding that I realize or have learned or become mature enough that life is suffering, or there's a great excitement about really believing and choosing to live by the idea that life is rich and exciting and, yes, full of change, but the change is always like more like an adventure than a something of torment. And in the patter part of it, it starts out saying, I cancel my need to be right. Well, I have all my life on some level figured that life was hard and it was sad in many ways. Big pockets of other things, but basically when it boils down, it's sad. And so I'm canceling my need to be right about that, and I'm stuck there. That's where I'm stuck. I seem to make up another story about how that is true. And I haven't gotten off that dead spot. And I wondered if we could sort of talk about that. Or it says in, you know, further down, it says, it's perfectly safe for me to see it, feel it, question anew, allow myself to question all the old conclusions about myself or anyone else or life, I add. But I keep reinforcing the story that life is difficult and very sad because there is a ton of physical evidence bearing that out. And, you know, you could go into it, you know, climate change, COVID, people who get divorced, murders, violence, wars that have always been there.
You know how you mentioned the Buddha in the beginning of this?
Yeah, right.
So have you read much about or studied the deeper aspects of what the Buddha was trying to indicate?
Well, if I have, I've long forgot it. I read more when I was in college and stuff, but no. And so you have, so tell.
Well, so the idea is that, you know, there's this statement from the Buddha that life is suffering. And then, you know, then there's also the idea of, we have to be on this quest for ending suffering. Well, if you take it very simply on face value, does that, you could jump to the conclusion that if life is suffering and our goal has to be to end the suffering, then our goal is to end life. But that's not what it's about, clearly. I mean, the Buddha wasn't saying go out there and end your life. But understand the process that creates suffering in us. And I know that we just dropped Susan Bingham, or she just dropped, but I'll keep talking. So it's the idea of ending the process that our minds are using. It's about ending the process that our minds are using to create the suffering. It's not about, you know, that everything about existence is suffering. The truth about existence is that it's this energy of creation, and it's in this flowing process, and its process is to keep creating and to change and grow and expand. And it's our minds that are struggling against that expansion, that grab onto things that we like and we want to hold on to them so we can form an attachment to them. And everything that's born in time ends in time, and so that is going to end. And then if we're attached to it, then we're going to create suffering. But if we learn to be in the flow, if we learn to live in the question, as Rilke would ask us to, if we learn to keep understanding that there's a lot more going on here than we know about, and there's always far more good going on in any moment than there is negative or bad, or those things that we tend as a culture to label negative or bad, that's when we can move into a process with our thoughts that's more about observation than it is about knowing and grabbing and grasping.
Right. That's good. I get it.
So the fact of the matter is, there you were, a bright, young, sensitive, what did you say, 8-year-old, who looked in the mirror and said, oh, I get it, life is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And while you were decidedly an intelligent 8-year-old, you know more, you understand at deeper levels, a lot more about life now than you did at 8. And so that belief that you've been holding on to, which has been one of your core beliefs, which has driven a lot of your thoughts and perceptions in life ever since then, is a really good thing to start opening up to question.
Mm.
I can understand how at 8 years old, being raised by the mother that you were raised by and the father that you were raised by, I can understand how an 8-year-old would come to the conclusion life is suffering. And I can understand, with the intelligence that you display and the emotional sensitivity that you display, how you might come to very firmly believe that you've cracked the code of the universe and now you've got it. And that would feel empowering to you at 8 years old. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you actually did discover a deep universal truth. It's probably far more likely that your 8-year-old self was really, really happy to think she finally figured something out that made some sense. Because she was probably 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, where she thought and kind of knew, with a kind of internal knowing, that life is supposed to be loving and respectful and joyful and compassionate, but that's not what you were being exposed to by your parents and life. So you were in the conflict, and you were searching and yearning for something, which set you up to grab onto this, you know, aha moment when you were 8 and pour a tremendous amount of your mental, emotional energy into it as though it were the absolute truth. But I would encourage you to use, you know, maybe you use more worksheets, maybe you use the Diedrich Wolzak work, where you go back to that 8-year-old and you understand that here she is, she's feeling this emotion of overwhelm and pain, emotional pain, and she comes to this aha realization that life is suffering and I'm supposed to suffer. And then Diedrich Wolzak would say, okay, now you work with the 8-year-old and you ask her to make the statement, I forgive myself for believing this negative belief, and I forgive myself for forgetting the truth that my value is internal and unchanging, and that there is always this more loving, more expansive, more compassionate side of life. And I repeat that a few times, my adult self coaching the 8-year-old self, my adult self saying, I forgive myself for believing this negative thing about myself and the world. I forgive myself for forgetting the truth about the infinite love that the world is made of. And coach your 8-year-old self to do the same. And do that a few times and then come back to the original interaction and see if it feels different. Are you with me?
I am. I don't know what to say. Certainly, I've taken notes as fast as I can. And something you said,
well,
you said this before. What?
You could try it right now. You could just visualize yourself being the 8-year-old who thinks she's come to this deep truth. And just try saying as your 8-year-old self, I forgive myself for believing this negative thing about myself and life. And take a breath. And then visualize yourself being the 8-year-old who says, I forgive myself for forgetting that my true value is internal and unchanging. And see how it feels.
Wow. This feels like major excavation work. I'm going to need one of those John Deere machines.
Well, probably not. just a little what Way of Mastery would call a smidgen of willingness. To just gently repeat the use of a tool like this, or, you know, do this tool a few times and then turn to the reality management worksheet and see what it offers. And
wow. You know, one of the reasons my friend Julie and I no longer are communicating, and we stopped communicating right about when COVID became a thing. And the thing she would be most angry at, among many things, was that I was a Pollyanna, that I was looking on the bright side and offering tools and, you know.
So what you mean to say there is, to state it accurately, is the excuse she was using to hide the real cause of her anger was that you were a Pollyanna.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The phrase she was using to keep herself in denial about the true causes of her anger was that you were a Pollyanna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
really, really valuable to say it that way and to catch all the different ways that you and I and everyone else lie to ourselves.
Yeah, right.
Because every time we tell that lie, we tend to believe it a little bit more. Why? Because it comes from what we consider to be a really good source, us, right? We tend to think we're smart. We tend to think we actually know what's going on in the world, and we don't. And there's the proof. You just said an bold-faced, out-and-out lie. She's angry because I'm a Pollyanna. That's never happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's as true as the earth is flat.
Mm.
It's the same truth. It's never happened that your being a Pollyanna has caused emotions in anybody else. So, back to what you were saying. She uses the excuse of you being a Pollyanna, mm-hmm, to hide from herself the true cause of her anger. So what were you going to say about that?
I don't remember. As soon as you started talking, it went right out of my head. It may come back. No big deal. I never understood the meaning of the word samsara, but I think it's Michael Singer who talks about the Vedantic or Hindu word samsara as both positive and negative events or people or anything upon which we become or to which we become attached. I remember Jeannie said she had no reason to do a negative workshop, so she did a positive worksheet about something good that had happened, and I thought, well, why would you bother doing that? But I get it now, because anything at all becomes an idol. Everything becomes an idol. I feel as if I'm this little matchstick going down a flowing river, and the river is narrow, and there are things jutting out on each side, and my match gets stuck here, stuck there, stuck the other way. I don't stay in the center of that little river, but get attached. They're like idols. I think samsaras, could you say they're like idols?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert in this, but I have played one on TV. No, let's see. I have listened to the Michael Singer teaching series about this. He's got an 8-session web class on this, and I've listened to it 3 or 4 times, and he uses the word with a K sound in it, samskara. And what it is, yeah, is the blockage, it's the disruption that gets created in our mind, in our energy system, when we want something to stick around rather than just flow through us, or we want to push away something rather than let it flow through us. And so he draws the analogy in that series of classes about a creek or a river, and if there aren't any stones or obstructions, the water just flows. But if you drop a boulder in that creek or river, now the water hits the boulder and has a backwash and a turbulence that it creates.
Oh, yeah.
In this analogy, the water in the river is the flow of life energy that's supposed to move through us from our root chakra up through our crown chakra.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the flow of life that's supposed to be moving. It's the flow of events and thoughts and emotions that we're supposed to be able to just witness. Allowing, accepting, and surrendering to the flow, appreciating the flow. But every time we make a judgment, this is bad, this is good, I don't ever want to feel that again, I want to feel that forever, we grab onto or push away, and the only way we can make an impact is to, because energy, as Michael Rice is always talking about, energy is constantly in motion. So when we say we want to hold on to this energy or push this energy away, it stays in motion, but we create a circle. We create the backwater, the ebby, the turbulence. And that turbulence in our own energy system is what creates the suffering that the Buddha is talking about.
Yeah.
And that when we go with the flow, while there might be temporary sensations of pain or pleasure, there isn't the suffering. There is the experience of life in a far more full, deep, rich, expansive way when we give up the idea that our conscious logical mind knows what's right.
That's so good. You know, he said when one of those samskaras shows up, and it's probably mainly negative ones he's talking about, little steps to take to step out of that, give the feeling or the thought behind the feeling a positive spin, use a mantra, which is like saying, open yourself to something other than your own looping thoughts. Open yourself to the benign or the loving universe or God or whatever, and then accept everything. Resist nothing. That's almost like a little tool right there. Yeah, putting it to use.
So in Michael Singer's work with this, I create the same kind of disruption, turbulence, when I grab onto something good as I do when I push away something that I've labeled as bad.
Right. That's true. But that's
and
what
then,
the Course in Miracles says when they say you go from the unhappy dream to the happy dream. That's the happy dream, and that's a good thing, but it's not it. It's a step toward. But the last step isn't even taken by us, taken by God or the Holy Spirit. So we get to the edge and be open, I guess.
Yeah. You know, that's the various ways of talking about it are that we, meaning the conscious logical mind, is never going to be able to even conceive of heaven or comprehend it once we're there, much less get us there or figure out how to get us there.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Finley tells a story where he says, you know, the woman climbs up into the mountains because she's heard there's a spring up there that if you can just drink even once from this spring, that your next level of enlightenment is, you know, your peace is bestowed upon you. So she makes this arduous journey, and she hikes up here, and she's looking around, and she goes up a number of times. And finally, one day, she finds this meadow hidden way up in the mountains, and she thinks, oh, there's this little patch of green here, and this has got to be it. There's got to be a spring around here somewhere. And she's searching, and she's calling out, spring, spring, you know, God, spirit, light. And she hears what she's pretty sure is a rumbling voice saying, give me what I want. And that's all it takes. And now she is off to the races. And she is praying, and she is meditating, and she is building little stone shrines. And then she travels down the mountain and comes back, you know, hundreds of times. And she brings other pilgrims, and she says, this is it. I heard the voice here. Let's build a shrine. And they build a temple. And of course, she never hears the voice again. And then eventually, after, you know, untold months and years of this, it flies into a rage one day when she's up there by herself, and she destroys the whole temple, throws the whole shrine aside, and in a collapses in a heap of exhaustion. And as she collapses, she says through her tears, I don't know what you want. And when she wakes up, the spring is running right by her head.
Mm.
We will never figure this out.
Mm.
Our conscious logical mind is not going to take us to the next level. It can't. Our conscious logical mind and the misapplication of its energies is what creates all of our mental and emotional suffering. It is what Krishnamurti and David Bohm were referring to, and David Bohm coined the term sustained incoherence.
Right.
It is what, you know, all of these people are trying to get us to understand when they say, you know, Byron Katie says, the I don't know mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our challenge, right? How to be a person who defines him or herself through the use of their conscious logical mind, and at the same time understand that's a prison for me. And as long as I pour more and more energy into who I think I am and trying to get people to see me in a certain way or trying to change my state of being with this tool or this trick or that trick, what I'm doing is building thicker and more impenetrable walls in my prison. So the answer is I need to be willing to, you know, use a tool. So last weekend I opened an email and I got, you know, I instantly threw an interpretation on the email that triggered rage that's been in me for a long time, and I needed to be willing to do some worksheets on that rage because, you know, the smart money is on the fact that there's nothing in the electronic signal that showed up on my phone that was causing rage within me.
Mm.
And I don't need to figure it out. I don't need any deep insight. I just need to be willing to continue to take 100% responsibility for the emotions I'm creating, acknowledge them rather than deny them, like Diedrich Wolzak would say. His step one is acknowledge it. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I could easily have said, okay, well, I had this, you know, flash of rage, but, you know, I'm bigger than that, and I know how to answer this to make it all go away, and I could have constructed my, you know, simple business-sounding, you know, take responsibility email and let it go and never done any worksheets on it.
Yeah.
But if I do that, then I deny the fact that I have this pile of rage in me that's there to get triggered the next time I interpret a sight, a sound, an event in a similar way. So it's not about figuring it out. It's about willingness to move into allowance and surrender and to use tools to explore what is it that my mind is doing over and over and over again that I'm afraid to look at. And that's a real good one that you talked about, right? This realization that when you were 8, you reached a conclusion that life is suffering. Well, be willing to open that conclusion up again and again and again to get reexamined and to do worksheets on any negative emotions that come up when you have that memory of that conclusion coming to your conscious logical mind, and watch what happens.
You know, in a way, there are some meditations which suggest that we go to a happy place or a good memory, a place where we felt loved and safe. But in a way, this is even more profound. We're invited to maybe use that as evidence against our conclusion that life is suffering, but not to stay there either. Not really to go anywhere, back or future. There's no, in fact, if we go back or into the future, we are dealing with idols and curses and blessings. But staying in the absolute present seems just such a challenge.
Yeah,
I don't
it's a huge
have a
challenge
clue how
because
to do it.
Well, because our minds have been conditioned out of it. You know, that's how we were born. We were born just living in the moment. We were born without language. We were born without... And so we were trained into it for decades. And so now the challenge is undoing all of that conditioning, or at least developing the ability to observe that conditioning.
Yeah.
And seeing
well,
it
think,
for what it is,
yeah.
rather than
mm-hmm.
assuming that it is all there is and it's the real world
Right.
The real challenge is to be able to question it, to be awake and aware in the moment and observe it and question it. And there isn't a whole lot to do once you see the truth of it. This is what the Krishnamurti teachings would say. You know, people would say, well, then what? And then what? Nothing. Once you see, it's like what Guy Finley says. He says, your mind only goes quiet once your mind becomes aware that it is the source of your pain and suffering, not the solution to it. And that's the only thing. It's that process of observation. That's the only thing that ever quiets the mind. When the mind itself becomes aware that it is the source of your suffering, not the solution to it, then the mind goes quiet. But before that, the mind is going to be busy trying to end its suffering because it's been so heavily conditioned to believe that it isn't the cause of its suffering and that it needs to find the solution. It needs to be the solution.
Right. That's it, Dr. Tim, right there. Oh, man. I bet the mind doesn't go quiet. I don't trust my mind to go quiet, even if I realize it is the source of my suffering, it's going to keep yammering.
No, that won't happen. But how do you move yourself into a position where the mind can observe that? The answer is, Michael Rice turns and looks at the board and says, all of the above.
Yeah.
And so I need to just be willing to move into the use of tools and understand that it is not the conscious logical mind that's going to find my answer. You know, I talked about this a few weeks ago on the internet show. I was in this battle with a situation for a couple years, and all of a sudden I did just enough worksheets, I did just enough journaling and just enough EFT tapping, and then a couple hours later I was driving to work and all of a sudden it was like the clouds parted and the trumpets blared, and I realized, oh, I'm the bonehead here who keeps doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And for 2 years, everything I was trying seemed to me to be different.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lens through which I eventually could see that let me see that, oh, my gosh, everything I've been doing is basically trying to do the same thing over and over again. Basically, what I'm doing is trying to get somebody to do something they're not willing to do, and I don't have any control over them.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't my conscious logical mind that genius that it is, came up with that solution. It was this, umpteen repetitions of worksheets and EFT tapping and breath session and goal canceling and journaling about it, and then driving to work. You know, in the mindless activity of driving to work, and all of a sudden here is this, life-altering realization. Oh, you're the bonehead, right? You're the bonehead doing the same thing over and over, expecting eventually it'll yield different results. It's not my conscious logical mind that saves me. My conscious logical mind can help me figure out a computer program, help me get my zipper up, help me get driven to work, help me get some basic nutrition in my body. But when I turn into an experience of pain, fear, sadness, guilt, shame, my conscious logical mind is not my rescuer. It is the prisoner. I mean, the prison guard. It's the guard, it's the prison, it's the whole thing. So our willingness needs to be to just simply continually engage the tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know, the other phrase that comes to mind is, keep reminding myself, whenever I'm feeling negative, when I've reached a negative conclusion, when I'm feeling the anxiety or the fear or the grief about somebody I know who's suffering or whatever, or somebody I know that's suffering and I know if they would just do this, this, or this, they would feel better, for me to keep reminding myself, you know what, Tim, there's a lot more going on here than you know about. When you consider that neuroscience today tells me that if I really focus and concentrate, I'll be able to be aware of, you know, 9 bits of energy when 10,000 brain cells are firing and probably 20 trillion bits of data are hitting my senses. And my senses are only recording a tiny fraction of the energy that's available in the universe. I only see a small fraction of the light spectrum. I only hear a small fraction of the vibration that we call, you know, hearing or audible spectrum. There are energies that we have technology that can record, the X-rays and the gamma rays and the MRI patterns. My senses can't record any of that. There is an endless amount going on here that I don't know about. And when I have a negative thought or emotion about myself or somebody else, all I can know for sure is it's a lie or it's based in a falsehood. This is an old tape playing. It's not about the present moment. And if I take an action from it, I'm just going to make my situation worse. When I act from those negative thoughts and emotions, I'm pouring negative energy into the moment. It's not going to go well. So when my mind tells me, oh, this is horrible, and oh, this person should do this or that to feel better, and oh, my life shouldn't be going this way, I like to try and remind myself, well, as soon as I can, Tim, there's a lot more going on here than you know about.
That's so good.
It's most likely going to work out far better than I ever could have imagined.
Oh, I like that thought, too. But
well, it does. It just keeps working out better than I ever could have imagined. You know, I remember talking to one of our group members a few years ago, and she was saying, but this shouldn't and this shouldn't. And I said, look, I remember when my kids were young, and I remember how what my life felt like and what I thought needed to happen for me to have happiness. And I went out working to try and make that happen. And here I sit, you know, 20 years later, and I have almost nothing that I thought I needed to have happiness in my life back then. And I have far more contentment, joy, satisfaction than I ever imagined was possible. So what my conscious logical mind is telling me needs to happen, especially when there's any negative thought or negative emotion going on, is just wrong. And it's based on a tiny fraction of data hitting my senses, and that's only a tiny fraction of everything that's going on in the world. So I'm far better off reminding myself, hey, Tim, there's a lot more going on here than you know about.
That's such a relief.
So thank you for that. We are at the end of our time. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's been a while.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Have a wonderful weekend. You're welcome. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll mute you to stick around if you'd like, and I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate it. I apologize. I missed the majority of your show. We were outside early this morning working in the garden, and the next thing I knew, my watch was buzzing that it was showtime. So it was like, oh, my gosh. So good grounding
right, well,
this morning,
yourself,
though.
Have yourself a lovely show and a great weekend.
You too. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, July the 30th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us, and we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here with us. Just had a good morning of gardening this morning and harvested some awesome tomatoes, potatoes, one strawberry. Anyway, we are into the last very end of the month of July. Pretty amazing. It's gone by so quickly. And we're honored to get to engage in this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness. I heard from a couple of folks yesterday that listened to yesterday's show that they said really cemented the, although they'd heard it all before, cemented the whole process of how perception works and how this energy system operates in a new way for them. So if you missed yesterday's show, you might want to give it a quick listen. I think Jeannie's got it in the special archives, and it was Jeannie started out with some trigger thoughts that just got me rocking, and I think I went on for about 45 minutes, but we just kind of laid the whole foundation of the workout again in you know, a little different way than normal, and you know, that process of building the brain cells and realizing and recognizing more and more that, you know, if there's ever been something that maybe you saw once a long time ago and somebody presents it to you and you look at it, you go, oh, geez, I should know. I just don't know what that, I don't know. I just, well, when it gets to the subtlest, deepest concepts of healing, you've got the brain cells. And sometimes you go, you know, I should know that. I just don't know. I just don't get it. And you can't structure a perceptual construct that you don't have the brain cells for. And so that's why some people can look at something and go, oh, that's ABC. Someone else looks at it and goes, I don't know, I just don't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. So a big part of this process is engaging the tools until you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear what's truly going on from the perspective of the actuality of what's happening in the world, rather than from the point of view of our realities. So we're honored that you're here, and I'm going to jump right into the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We are on chapter 15, I believe it is. Yeah, we're on 15, the chapter on transitions. And we're looking at the idea of transitioning out of the old hostility and fear-based mind and moving into literally the mind, the true mind being based in love, and the function of the body that we call the mind being a reflection of love. In other words, transitioning out of the hostility and fear-based perceptual constructs into a place where we've removed all data based in hostility or fear, where we've removed the hostility and fear-based link to that data, so that everything in the mind is just data. And then the mind, or what we call the mind, it really isn't a mind, it's just a function of the storage of information in the so-called body and the firing of brain cells. And when that's corrected, then you're now at the point where you can create a place for what we call enlightened perception. The first stage in that is to move from distorted or projected perception into accurate perception, then to enlightened perception, which means that in your perceptual system, information about actuality accurately shows up rather than just being another reality. So we're talking to Richard about transitioning.
Michael.
Yes, will you?
It may be the same chapter, but yesterday you said you were on the chapter on abuse and victimhood.
Oh, pardon me. That's right. We're on 15, abuse and victimhood. I'm still thinking about the previous chapter, but yeah, we did transitions before this. You're right. I'm on page 94. It is abuse or healing abuse and victimhood. You're right, and it's kind of transitioning. So, thank you for getting me back on track. So the thought we finished with yesterday was a key thought. It says when you choose to be aware of behavior patterns that don't serve you, you're in a position to change them. That's empowerment. And we pointed out the fact that empowerment comes from within. It doesn't come from without. You can get support from without, but the empowerment is always yours. It always has been yours. It always will be yours. If you tie your power up in hostility and fear and blame and guilt and drama and trauma, you'll still have the same amount of power, but it'll seem like you're powerless because all of your power is tied up in insanity. Once you forgive and collapse the hostility and fear-based mind, then, you know, it's kind of like country music when you play it backward. You know, you get your car back, you get your girl back, you get your farm back, you get your truck back, and you get your dog back. Well, when you start to undo the hostility and fear-based mind, you get your power back. And that's what we're here to support you having. And the source of your power is not outside of you. It doesn't come from somebody else. It doesn't come from a teacher. It doesn't come from another person. It comes from within you. It's yours. It's always been yours. How you spend it, it's up to you. I offer Richard the thought here. It sounds like the only way you thought you could step into your power other than through victimhood was through hostility. That's exactly what I thought, Richard said. Without my anger, I was powerless, he confided. Hostility is one of the most addictive, damaging drugs there is. Every person who engages in it needs their fix to keep their pain suppressed. So let's recognize that all forms of anger or hostility are simply a drug. They're not an emotion. People talk about, oh, the emotion I felt was anger. No, there's no such thing as an emotion called anger. There is a drug called anger that anesthetizes pain. Whenever we can get somebody for just a moment, somebody who's raging and rocking in their rage, to drop that for 1 second, the next thing we'll see them do. And I'm talking about, you know, I've stood in a prison with, you know, guys that could wipe me out in half a second. And in the middle of their rage, walked over, put my arms around them, and extended love. And the next thing this giant of a raging man is doing is in tears like a three-year-old boy, because all of a sudden he's in touch with the memory of the pain of the three-year-old that turned him into a monster in the first place. The power person dynamic that he's still playing out and is still running his life. He thinks he's big and tough and powerful, but he's actually being run by daddy or mommy from when he was a three-year-old. And of course, daddy or mommy when he was a three-year-old was run by grandpa and great-great-great-great-great-great. It's just been going on for so many generations. We need to get out of the desert. We need to get out of this unconscious condition. Those who use this drug encourage others to do the same because they themselves have not faced what they have suppressed with their own anger. And I say suppressed, but it's actually more anesthetized. Often, the rationalization that we have a right to our anger is used to justify holding on to this form of self-abuse. We must be willing to deal with what we've hidden from ourselves and stop using that drug if healing is going to occur. Richard says, what are you talking about? Do drugs suppress pain? He nodded. You look at someone who's extremely hostile, and you will always find deep emotional pain. Hostility sets up body chemistry that suppresses pain. Using hostility is like using any other drug. If one stops using their addictive substance, in this case, the internal chemistry produced by hostility, it will withdraw when the pain the drug has suppressed surfaces. That's the point at which the craving gets so strong, many return to their supplier for another fix. So instead of that, we're going to invite you to recognize that you could be engaging forgiveness instead. And as you engage forgiveness, you remove the root of your pain. Remember that, that forgiveness is removal. Forgiveness isn't about, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. Forgiveness is about undoing the drugs or breaking away from the drugs you've been using so that we can look inside and be honest with what's going on. I'm just making a note here. I didn't edit the book. So when we let go of the need for an anesthetic, all of a sudden, life tends to look like you start doing your work, and life tends to look like it's turning to crap. And you know why? Because you're allowing yourself to see the crap you've been hiding from yourself. And how, you know, you might remember that song, old song, how long has this been going on? Guess what? 1,000 generations in every one of our bloodlines. And it's just time for us to wake up. It's time for us to realize, that is, to make real who we are, to move into functioning as love, as human beings, and to open the space for not only the healing of ourselves, but the healing of every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So we have a small project here. You know, the market is limited for this work. There are only about 7.5 billion minds that need it. And we're going to do our best to do everything we can to make it available. The archives of these radio shows are the one of the ways we're doing that. And the conversation with people who have the courage to step in and step up and to look at what they're doing to themselves, to face perhaps 1,000 generations of unresolved trauma and pain. It is not a Dr. Feelgood process, but oh, on the other side of it, wow, what a delight. So, Miss Jeannie, do you have anything to share today?
No, I'm just
after
slowing
being
down,
out in the garden
breathing.
And running and playing in the hose as I sprayed you.
It was hot. I can't believe that 4 hours went by that fast, but...
Yeah, it was pretty quick. It was fun. Yeah. We got some good stuff done. One of the things we did is we have there's a product called Biochar, and it's kind of like I saw an interesting analogy on it. If you think about a golf ball, the golf ball's got all these dimples in it. But if you want it to hold water, or you want that golf ball to hold nutrients, microbes that are good for the soil, you're not going to get very far. But if you think about a wiffle ball, you cut it in half and you put another wiffle ball inside it, you cut that in half, you put another and another and another, you got all these chambers and it holds water and holds microorganisms and is just powerfully restorative to the soil. And way back, we were using biochar, I think it was probably 27 or 28 years ago when Peter Strino and his wife, Tanya, were at Heartland, and their research, or our research, would led us to this product. It was basically a charcoal-type product, and so we brought a couple of bags of it back from Heartland. We'd actually bought a bunch of it a couple of summers ago, and so we're mixing up and putting it into the garden, so that was part of our garden effort today, and you know, enhancing the soil and staking up the tomatoes, picking the potatoes. So any other thoughts for you, sweetie?
No, I don't have any thought. We've got several people on the switchboard, some we haven't heard from in a while. So somebody press one. Let's talk.
Let's say hello. How can we support you? What's on your mind? How, if we haven't heard your voice in a while, if you haven't been on the show, you know, what's happening in your world? Share with us. Connect with us. Let us know what's happening. How is your process going? Are you moving it through the family system? Talk to us. Tell us what's happening. Beyond that, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our calling number is 563-999-3581. And if you have a thought for us, you have a question, if you need some support, then please dial that number. You'll be listening to the show on your phone. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will introduce you by your area code, and we'll be having a conversation. And it really is the questions that are most important.
We have a hand up.
Great. Let's say hello.
417, you're on the air. Is this Judy?
Yes, it is. Good afternoon.
Hey, welcome, young lady. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I have a question. When you were talking about the hostility and the anger and the drug, that it being a drug and everything, how does prejudice fit in there?
Well, I think that prejudice would be a thought based in fear that, you know, something or someone else is the cause of your pain and suffering. That would be my definition off the top of my head for prejudice. So it would be and oftentimes prejudice is backed by anger because it's based in some form of pain or perceived pain. And that perceived pain has been projected into, you know, some person, place, thing, or event. You know, you need prejudice against an animal or a person or what have you. And or it can be based in guilt for perceived harm done to others. And then the denial of that perceived harm leads one to project it into their brain's image of the person they're prejudiced against. So they'll take all of their fear, their hostility, their pain, put it into their brain's image of that other person, their guilt, what have you. And it's just an invitation to go, oh, okay, so here's another piece of work to do. That would be my take. What was that little laugh about there, young lady?
Oh, it's a lot of work to do. Yeah, there's a lot of work around that. Okay, well,
It's a big issue on the planet. Yeah, it's a huge issue on the planet. And, you know, especially with all the racist, you know, the prejudice in the area of race that's going on today. You know, we see this white supremacist uprising that foments, as it always has, you know, it lives on a lie and perpetrates its lie into every arena you can go, and then follows the lie is all the hostility that's beneath the pain that's not resolved, and, you know, getting people to open to that pain. I remember there was an interesting video. The fellow who did the movie, what was the name of it? It was about McDonald's. And he heard about a court case. Somebody sued McDonald's for some disease they had going on, saying that McDonald's had poor nutrition. You know, the food was poor nutrition. And so McDonald's defense was, no, our food is balanced and nutritious and blah, blah, blah. So he decided to go on a McDonald's fast. He set himself up. He was actually a vegetarian. And he decided he was going to test out whether it was healthy food or not. And so he set up a 30-day plan where he ate nothing but McDonald's. And every time he went into a drive-in and he ordered something, if they said, would you like it to be supersized, he had to supersize it, and he had to eat it. They were kind of the rules that he went by. He was very healthy, trim young man, very healthy. He was in his early 30s. He had, if I remember correctly, there were three doctors. Gene, maybe you're remembering the name of the film I'm talking about. But he had three doctors who checked him out, perfect specimen, great health. Along about day 22 or 23, one of the doctors quit. He said, if you eat that food for another day, you are in danger of having a heart attack. Here's the emergency number at the hospital. Stop, and I quit. I'm not going to be responsible for this. They said that his liver was turning to paste. It was just unreal. In any event, He had a television show for a while. He may still have it. I don't know. I'm not remembering his name. In any event, he went down to the border, and there was a self-proclaimed border protection agent, not somebody that worked for the government, but a guy that was just an individual who hated Mexicans, and he decided he was going to guard the border. He lived near the border, and he was going to guard it. And so the fellow who did this, Sperling, his name's Sperling, invited this guy to be on his show, and the agreement was that he would interact with this Mexican family. And he ended up spending time with this family. He saw the trauma and pain that they were in. He went back with the man to his village in Mexico and saw the disastrous conditions he was living in. He ended up becoming a supporter of people trying to make a better life for themselves. And you know, when we get exposed to the truth, it's pretty powerful. And, of course, every form of prejudice, everything that contains hostility and fear is a lie. It's, you know, the indicator that the mind is lying as it generates a particular perceptual construct about any object of attention, whether it's self or someone else. You know, people can be prejudiced and down on themselves. Oh, I'm so stupid. I'm so inadequate. I'll never make it. I'll never be any good. There'll never be anything for me. You know, that's just a prejudice against self. And it's all a lie. And so the beauty is that when people start to confront the lie, when they start to tell themselves the truth, when they look at the underlying dynamic and work through the hostility and fear, the lies disappear. And all of a sudden, we start functioning as human beings. And what is a human being? You know, remember the first time you held your first newborn baby and you tapped into that presence of love?
That's
and when you,
oh, yeah.
When you are restored to that, when you realize that that is not only your baby's essence, but it's your essence too, then the work is about the restoration to that essence. And, of course, all we have to do is work through everything based in hostility or fear that's not been dealt with in our bloodline to do that. It's a pretty significant challenge, but, you know, it isn't the process that's traumatic, but going through the process, we can touch into many dissociated traumas. But on the other side of it, it's so much fun when you start seeing what happens to people's lives. You start seeing the light in their eyes and the liberty from the insanity. It's just pretty awesome. So do you have a particular issue that around the idea of prejudice that you need some support with?
You're going to, well, I don't know how you're going to react to this, but it's, I was a little shocked. I moved into these apartments and so I can shut down my storage unit, which is close by.
Right.
And I've been here, you know, like it was right after Christmas I moved here. So we've all been in our apartments most of the time. And I have this lady who lives across the parking lot from me, and she sits out there on her stoop every day and smokes her cigarettes, and she's got a guy friend that comes and visits with her every now and then. And her and two of the other girls here, they have this car that the one lady owns it, but these other two girls and her use it. If they need the car, they'll go get it and drive it where they need to go, you know, and they'll go shopping together and everything. So a couple of the guys here, one of them has got a heart he's going to have transplanted, and the other one is he's in a wheelchair, no arms or legs. And one day I was walking to the mailbox one evening, and he's knocking on the door of the neighbors across the street, calling her name, and she doesn't answer the door. He's out there banging on that door, the one in the wheelchair, trying to get her to come to the door. And so when I walk back by, he's still there working on it. And I say, is there anything I can help you with? And he says, I want her to come over and fix me some dinner. And I said, well, I've got dinner. I've got enough for two. Would you like some? And so I took him over some baked fish and some vegetables to go with it. And I told him, I says, now, I do cook enough for two almost every day. If you need any extra, just let me know. And then the other guy, when I talked to him, he was telling me about his troubles. I thought, well, when our missionaries come over, I'll ask them if they want a blessing, and they'll help them along the way for the elders to come and pray for them, give them a blessing. So sure enough, both of them took the blessing, and but the little girl across the street, somehow or the other, she took offense to that, and which was none of her business anyway. And I heard her hollering out with her girlfriends over there on the stoop, two doors down. She's a G.D. Mormon. And I kind of, I was a little bit shocked, you know, and I thought, oh, I didn't know there was still a lot of prejudice going on around here, you know. And that's actually the first time I ever really faced any prejudice or anything about my religion. I know they've had a lot of prejudice in the past, but they're out there doing so much good in the world, and they're good people. I'm one of them. And I only intend to do good. I didn't intend to offend anyone. I wanted to just help these guys a little bit further along the way. And so I've been working on that. But when you started talking about the hostility and the anger being a drug, I wondered, how did prejudice fit in there? Is it because there's hostility there? There was anger. But what is prejudice? Is it just a, is it a noun or is it a verb?
It's a thought disorder.
A thought disorder.
It's just a thought disorder where somebody's hooked up their hostility or fear to their brain's image of someone else.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, the anesthetic that people use is hostility. So usually there will be hostility involved. And again, oftentimes guilt, because one, you know, it's just a part of a person that knows that they're playing out a lie and that their viciousness is not deserved. And so,
yeah, you know, I agree with that. You can't deny the truth within yourself. You may deny it out there, but within yourself, you cannot get away from the truth. And there is guilt that goes with that. I'm sure of it.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I'm working on. And
so the most powerful gift you can give is, you know, each time you sit out there and that lady or those ladies are out doing their thing, just do a love exchange with them.
Uh-huh.
Do a love exchange.
Okay.
I remember back several years ago, we were in Hawaii, and there was a couple who hosted us in on the big, or not on the Big Island, but on Oahu. And I remember sitting out in the on the deck with these folks. And he had been a top-level businessman, and his assessment of the world, we're sitting out on his deck having this conversation, is the world is going to hell in a handbasket, so I moved to Hawaii to get out of the fray and just let it go, just watch it go down the tubes, and I'm just going to stay over here and enjoy my life. And he was kind of in a little bit of a cynical place with, well, I'm going to keep doing the work of forgiveness and spreading it around the planet. And he came to the whole series of workshops that we did the week we were there and did the still point breathing process. This is about 10 or 12 years ago. I still talk with him two or three times a month, or maybe twice a month. And he, as a result of the work that he did, he decided to move back to the mainland. He now lives in Seattle area. And a while back we were talking, and this world that he had decided he was just going to let it go to hell and, you know, sat in his fear and his hostility in Hawaii. He said one of his favorite things to do now, and he lives in a mixed neighborhood that in the past would have been kind of a challenge for him. But he bought a house, and he said, I sit on my front deck, and I watch people go up and down the street. He said, I just hold them in love. I just love exchange with them. And he said, it's changed my life so dramatically. I don't know what it's doing for their lives, but he said, that's now kind of like my job. That's what he does. So, you know, he's come back to the world, and he's living in a space, and he's, you know, getting a little elderly. He's got some health challenges, but that's what he kind of sees as his job now, rather than, oh, to hell with the world, I'm getting out. So, you know, it can be a simple gift, but, oh, the energy exchange that can happen there and the healing that can happen, it's just beyond amazing.
I love that story.
You know, the thought that when we started the Lessons in Living program in the Unity School, kindergarten to grade 8, back, so this is 37 or 38 years ago, the first lesson that we offered to the kids in this school was, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. I don't know how many tens of thousands of people that we've given that message to over the last 37 or 38 years. But more and more I'm seeing people that are going, yeah, that's what I'm doing. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. First time I was at Heartland, I stayed down there, and I think it was Love, down the hill towards Julie.
Right.
And had that was the first place I stayed, I think. And I really got to connect with what love was from inside of me. And I hadn't had that before. And so, and that was back in the 90s. And,
right.
And so after I went home from the intensive, that was the early 90s. And then in the around 2000, just before 2000, my grandkids came to live with me because mom was into drugs. And that house was just so full of love with the kids there. And at night, in the evenings, you know, when the sun was going down and everything's quieting down for the evening, and the kids are, we're cleaning up the kitchen after dinner, and we're there was just an aura in the house. You could feel it, you could see it. And I thought to myself, we lived up on a hill, and it was 80 some odd acre farm, and then the road went along down the bottom, and my home was just so full of love. I prayed to Heavenly Father that He would let this love travel and fill the space here all the way down to the road. And if anybody was passing by, which is rarely, and they needed extra love, that they would feel that and that they would feel comforted. And
sweet.
It was about a week later. I was in town, which is about 15 miles south of there, getting gas. And this fellow was getting gas there where I pulled up to get gas. And he said, Miss Phelan, he said, I used to live down the road and around the corner from you. I'm the guy that had four or five kids there. And he had four or five kids. I can't remember how many. And he said, my wife and I got divorced. And he says, I am so lonesome for them. And they had been divorced for, I guess, 5 years. He said, I drove down the road the other day just to feel, you know, going past, and I went past your house on the way to my house. And he said, I could feel the love all the way down to the road.
And he never said, know who you're going to impact.
He said, I want to thank you for that. And
you never know
so
whose
I
life
know,
is going to change.
I know the energy that we participate in and that we nourish in our homes, that it is a real thing, and people around us get it too, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. So, anyway,
well, when you recognize the physics of it, you know, there is nothing on the so-called physical plane that interferes with the movement of the frequency of love. You know, like let's say, you know, here I am in a room and I've got a light on, and the light goes to all four corners of the room, but it doesn't penetrate the wall because the wall absorbs the light. On the other side, There's no light coming through the wall. It inhibits its movement. And, you know, if I had a glass wall, gee, the light would penetrate the glass. So, you know, when you realize from a physics point of view, there are certain frequencies that penetrate anything and everything. You know, I'm in a room that's closed up, yet I can use my cell phone. Obviously, the cell phone signal penetrates the walls where the light doesn't. And, of course, the radio signal has a certain limit as to how far it's going to go because there are things in the material world that interfere with, you know, certain metals and things like that that interfere with the transmission of that signal. But when it comes to the presence of love, it is of such a high frequency that there's nothing that can block it. And, you know, that to me, the physicist Yeshua, when he said a little leavening leavens the whole loaf, recognizing he was not talking about bread, he was talking about those who choose to incarnate as love, to bring active present love into their world and to extend it to others, even if others seem to not deserve it. You know, what did they say, what did Yeshua say about it? He says, my father, you know, he causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. There's no inhibition in it. There's no, oh, you're not a good guy, we're not going to give you rain on your garden, we're going to save it for the guy next door. It's just, and when we recognize that as we intensify that experience and allow it to, and actually consciously, purposely direct it to places where it's needed, it gets received and it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It'll soften the hardest heart.
I was watching on YouTube the other day the scientist that has, he's found the signature on the DNA of the Creator. And the message is, and it's in, I believe, Hebrew and Aramaic, and they're using the symbols of chemistry to find this, you know.
Right.
And it's basically God within. That's his signature on our creation, on our DNA.
Mm. Mm. Send me a link to that video. Text me a link. I'd love to see it.
I probably won't see it again. It does. A lot of these things come up and then they're gone. If it comes up again, I will.
If you go to your YouTube channel, you know, when you're watching YouTube, there's a little three bars up in the corner. If you hit that, there's a thing of history. You can go back and it'll show you all the videos you've ever watched.
Okay. Well, it's just the other
day.
It'll
be in your list. If you find it, send it to me. I'd love to see it.
Definitely. Definitely. And cool. There's one on fasting,
sweet,
too, that says that after, if you can fast for 38 days, it allows the body to heal from cancer because the cancer dies off.
Major reset.
Yeah, I'll send that one, too.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
All right, young lady.
Appreciate it, y'all.
Okay.
Okay.
I'd like to touch
Bye-bye.
In. Thanks for all your support all these years. It's, you know,
my
30-plus years we've been hanging out at Heartland together. So thank you for the support that you've been over those years, young lady.
My pleasure, and I'm very grateful for all that you have provided to help the healing in my life, too.
Honored and delighted.
To
and I wish things were at a state where we could open the space for you at this point with the whole COVID thing. I don't know how we're going to move forward next, but we're working on it.
Well, I think the Lord has plans for me, so I'm not really worried about that. So all
cool.
Things are in divine order, so we just go with it.
All right. Take care. Lots of love.
Bye-bye.
All right. Sweet. Gratitude for having the opportunity to touch people's lives with this work. It's And you know, it's interesting that in the healing process, we oftentimes come across all kinds of unresolved hostilities or fears. And, of course, how can I tell if the hostility or fear I'm feeling is mine or not? It's a really, really difficult question to answer. So am I feeling it? If I am, then I know it's mine. And, of course, I can always arrange my perception so I put it into my brain's perception of someone else and I think I'm feeling it because of something they did. And as the space opens, you get to go to the next level of awareness and function as a true human being, as this presence of love that we are each designed to incarnate. So delighted to be here, support, honored, gratitude for the thousands of people we've interacted with over the years, and the foundation we've created for this work to move throughout the globe. And so, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is quiet on both fronts. And the name of that movie was Super Size Me.
Super Size Me, that's it. Yeah, Spurlock. Sterling Spurlock, I think his name was, maybe. Anyway, he did an interesting TV show, and this one was really quite interesting, how this guy was going to protect the border against these invaders, and turn to a man of compassion and caring, and it's like, oh, this is my brother, this is my sister. Who is my brother? Who is my sister?
It's Morgan Spurlock.
Morgan Spurlock, okay. Cool. Yeah, that was an interesting movie, Super Size Me. It was a TV show. He did some really good stuff. And he may still be doing it. I don't know. Check him out. So if you're out there in listener land, we've got about 18 minutes left, so there's lots of time for conversation. What kind of a conversation can we have with you? What have you got to share with us? How can we support you? Are you using the forgiveness tools? If you go to our website, whyagain.org, you'll find in the upper left-hand corner of the page, and by the way, the website has been totally redone. It's totally new. Awesome work, Jeannie. Awesome work, Susan, on the rewrite. Totally redone. It's beautiful. Things are more easily accessed or organized in a way that's really quite searchable and user-friendly. So check out the website. But in the upper left-hand corner, there's still a link there that says Start Here. And if you click that link, it'll open into a whole series of links on exactly how forgiveness works. And you can do the worksheet process. We've got a step-by-step worksheet process. You can do it right there on the site. You can print the worksheets off from the site, so you're doing them in your own home. You can go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And if you type in those words, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app created by Miss Jeannie, a genius piece of work. It's really awesome. And so you can engage in the actual forgiveness process right there on your phone. And so as you engage, questions obviously arise. And so we're here to answer those questions and give as much support as we can. So if you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? Push one, let's have a conversation.
One of the conversations that was going on, I just got a text from Celinda. She's on there. Hold on a second. One of the conversations, though, with Dr. Tim at the beginning, Celinda, all you have to do is press 1 on your phone. Okay, so I'll get her in just a second. But
cool.
The conversation was of being in the moment, and it was I didn't catch the whole thing because we were late getting back in here, but one of the things, I do a program called Noom, N-O-O-M, and one of the lessons this morning was on being involved in being in the moment, and that we let future fears run us, and that we can counter that with a positive present, and that we can set intentions about what, we're planning for the day or whatever. And so it was a lot like our work, talking about setting intentions and setting goals. But
cool. One
of the things that I set this morning was to be consciously aware and be grounded as I was pulling weeds. And so we can set intentions and stay in the moment
even in little things, little everyday things like that. It doesn't have to be like a major life issue that we can be in the moment in. And so let's go to Celinda. It's area code 541. You're on the air.
Well,
how are you?
We haven't heard this young lady's voice in a while. Welcome.
Was that a clue when I couldn't remember what to press?
So how are you? What's happening in your world? How does your garden grow? That's what we've been working on this morning.
Well, that's where I am. And so I had to laugh and smile when Jeannie just mentioned about being in the present moment while she was weeding. And so I have missed you, and it's all good because I'm getting clarification on what our sacred breath wants me to do in order to activate my Christ consciousness. And so I've been in the hermitage, so to speak, and it's beautiful. And the little voice inside of me says, be still. Be still and know. So that's what I'm doing. I'm being still and knowing as it comes to me. When I wake up in the middle of the night and can't go back to sleep, I just say, hello, Yeshua. I'm coming home to
cool.
be with you for a few minutes. So I just wanted to check in, and I just really enjoyed what the lady said before. It was all timely and perfect for this moment for me. And I hope you
sweet.
See those links. You can post them for us.
Cool. And if you probably heard your notification ding that you'd gotten a text, because I just sent you a text of our harvest this morning, and lined along the hand railing of beside our peace pole are our tomatoes.
Oh.
You can see one of them there is about, got to be 2 pounds. And then you'll see there's one strawberry there, and one cucumber, one squash, and a bunch of potatoes. that's our lineup by the peace pole.
So were you able to plant some of those little tomatoes I sent for Aria Rain?
Yes, we've got a bunch of stuff in, and Aria is just loving. I mean, if you remember last year, as small as she was, she'd go out to the garden and grab a tomato and just chow down on it while she's still doing the same.
Cool.
She just is loving it. So
now she
yeah.
has her own little plants with her own Aria Rain-sized tomatoes. How sweet.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And
her,
Grandma
her actually,
and Grandpa
her...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I said Grandma and Grandpa are chowing down on the big ones.
Yes. We are, and we're just delighting. You know, she's coming up on her third birthday, so her third year of circling the sun. And she has become a very astute student of anatomy and physiology, which has just been so much fun to do with her. We back a few weeks ago, she swallowed a button. So we talked, you know, about where, you know, we're checking her bowel movements to see if we can find the button. We concluded that she probably didn't, but her mom and dad thought she had. So anyway, we had a conversation about, you know, how it goes down her throat and then down into her tummy, and that her stomach is there and her intestines and all. Well, I just happen to have a set of anatomy and physiology cards, like, you know, study cards that I had in my office. So I went and got them, and we showed them to her. Well, that was about, I guess we're getting on close to 3 weeks ago, minus the 10 days we were on the road, we didn't see her, but we've had her now probably, I don't know, 12 or 14 days, 13 days, something like that, since that started. And she now spends anywhere from an hour to 2.5 hours a day when she's here with those cards and watching videos on anatomy. And she can tell you where the liver is and where the pancreas is and where the heart is and what the heart does and the stomach and the small intestine and the large intestine. And she can tell you about how the pooper works. So It's been hilarious, and we've ordered a couple of extra sets of cards. So her dad now, you know, her dad was originally, he was wanting to become a vet, so he did pre-med, but then decided he didn't want to spend any more time in school. But he's now, she's now getting him back into anatomy and physiology because she's, dad, we need to work on these cards. So she calls, you know, at home, it's like, let's get the cards out, dad. And she'll sit for, literally sit for 45 minutes and watch like college level presentations on anatomy and physiology. She'll just sit, you know, and watch them. And she's totally engrossed. I mean, it's just so cool to watch. That's her
how,
new thing.
How sweet is that?
It's just,
so
I mean, it's so much fun.
For...
And...
Go ahead.
Well, I just, you know, when we got involved in the Avicen, because when I went to med school, microcirculation wasn't much of a conversation. You know, it wasn't understood very well, and really there wasn't much you could do about it, so it wasn't a big part of the conversation. But so I've kind of gone back to medical school. I actually went out and bought myself a course on anatomy and physiology online to get into a deeper study and understanding of that. And so now we're just kind of playing with this anatomy and physiology stuff, and she's just loving it. It's pretty cool.
Just falling deeper into the mystery, eh?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Michael, that's an interesting thought, because what I'm realizing, if we don't know ourselves, including how our body works, how can we be responsible? How can we be responsible for our immune system, which was created perfectly, and what now, which we have been given, you know, what is it, management husbandry over, and everything.
Right.
I mean, it's just from square one all the way up, which we'll never understand. It just boggles me.
Well, it's an amazing opportunity, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I have made an intention, and I hope that intention will sustain me and my community, is that no matter what the differences in our perceptions are, in our conclusions are for the moment, for the present moment, that I am unwilling to let any issue, either mine or somebody else's, separate me from love and from
being wanting to separate from love?
No, I'm not going. I am going to, the love exchange you mentioned today is beautiful, and what the lady who called in before said about sending out that energy was just so timely, because I am facing people with totally different perspectives than my own. And you know what happens in a family when people have different opinions and want to be right? And I'm just giving up being right.
All
and
right.
Say,
there
my
you go.
My job is love. Now, that's the intention. I set my rudder according to my little compass of my little ship, and I'm pointing towards the North Star, and I still have to practice. I got to keep that rudder in line.
That's the work. That's the work. And everything that goes against it is going to surface. And how profound is it to know that, oh, here's my next healing opportunity, rather than I need to fall into this hostility and fear-based stuff. So,
yeah,
nice work, young lady.
That's what's happening. As I am letting go of my people-pleasing and trusting more of being honest, all my hostilities are coming up that I buried before Michael and Jeannie. And I'm going, oh, there it is again. And I thought I wasn't hostile. Okay, offer it up, surrender it.
Nice. Nice.
Set
well, delighted that we've had that impact and are supporting you in that level of understanding and work. That's what it's all about. And from our end, it doesn't get better than hearing that.
Yes, and thank you. I'm definitely making you my family. I hope you don't mind.
We're on it. We're joining in it for sure.
And blessings to both of you and little Aria.
All right. Okay, lots of love, and tell Larry we said hello.
All right, I will. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, Miss Jeannie. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left.
Well, counting the outro, we've only got about three.
Three. Oh, gee, a three-minute conversation. Well, probably there isn't much room for more conversation. So I'll just take a minute, and we'll talk about the fact that we have a new self-study online intensive package. There are 90 hours of video in it that we suggest someone utilize over a period of 14 weeks. And codependence to interdependence communication practicum. So included in this 90-hour package is a workshop, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? On First Century Aramaic Forgiveness, Healing Through Relationships, recognizing that our relationships, you know, the workshop used to be called Healing Your Relationships, and then I realized there's no such thing as a diseased relationship. Every relationship perfectly reflects to us what we need to heal. And so healing through relationships, communication, did you hear what I think I said, and codependence to interdependence. So it was originally set up as a 14-week study program. There are a total of 90 hours in the program. And included along with the 90 hours of study, and once you buy that intensive, it's yours permanently. It's a streaming service for all of the video work. You can go back and watch it as often as you need to, review it, and there's so much depth that you can review it 100 times, and it'll have another level of meaning. Actually, it's a combination of two intensives, and people who were in the first intensive were invited as guests to go through the second one. And several people were like, oh, man, I thought I heard that the first time around, and I realized it's like I wasn't even there the first intensive, and now, I understand it. And, of course, the third time you listen, there'll be another level, and the fourth and the fifth and the tenth, there'll be level upon layer and layer upon level. So also included in that package, you know, when people come to Heartland, we do a total fresh and raw food program. Nothing is cooked, and the food is awesome. And Yurate, who was at Heartland, who came to a couple of intensives, and is a raw food chef, created a private Facebook page with videos and audios and questions and answers and recipes, 14 weeks, three meals a day of fresh and raw food. And the equipment, you know, she describes and goes into the equipment that's needed to do the food program if you want to do it at whatever level. You know, there's no requirement to do it. But if you want to introduce a different type of food into your dietary regimen, this is a powerful way to do it. She's got, you know, what you need to order, weekly menus and weekly, you know, ordering and where to order the best, what equipment you need, all of that. So that's all included in the package. And the full package for all 90 hours is $600. And so you have permanent access. And then if you decide to get that package and in the future, we do another online codependence to independence communication practicum. You can simply pay the difference between the $600 package to actually be into the next intensive live. And that next intensive will include another 2 hours of live question and answers. And once you've done that, anytime we do that intensive in the future, you'll be a guest in it free. So if you're interested in taking your work to the next level, this is the first time we've had this kind of an intensive package. You can go to our website and or drop Jeannie an email, Jeannie at whyagain.org, Jeannie at whyagain.org. In the meantime, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's a powerful gift to give the world. Blessings.